The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kurt Benrood from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sci-Fi. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi. This story is titled The Mobius Garden by James Bambury. When Suriak was given her first watercolors, she painted the garden she saw every night when she slept. In the first week, she worked through the pad of paper that came with the set, and in the week after, she covered the walls of her room with embankments of flowers. Her parents made sure she was never out of paper after that. "What's that?" her mother asked, as Suriak filled a sheet with splotches of yellow. "Fireflies." Brandon had never tried drawing anything his whole life, though he was older than Suriak. He was shocked when he saw the cloud of fireflies over his head while wandering through the city. He chased them through the spiral ramp of a parking lot and saw the swarm disappear through a metal grate in the wall. Brandon tugged at the grate, and it swung open on a pair of hinges. Inside, there was daylight. A garden opened up on the inside of the parking lot grate. Flowers and plants bloomed everywhere, and a giant banyan tree with draping branches stood in the middle of it all. Brandon went in further, having completely forgotten about the fireflies. He was transfixed by the patterns in leaves, petals, and sepals. He realized that he had no idea if he had been in the garden for minutes or hours. There was a sun in this place that stood overhead and didn't appear to move beyond noon. He returned to the grate and climbed back into the parking lot. He turned to look back through the grate and saw only gray. When Suriak was older, she started using more elaborate supplies and tools for her artwork. Boys from school called and asked if she wanted to go see a movie or read books of poetry together. "No, thank you. I have an important painting to finish." She hung up the phone and opened a tube of rusty red paint for the cat she had outlined. Brandon had met a girl, and he was falling more and more in love with her. He was on his way to her house with a ring in his pocket when he saw the green eyes in the alley. "Do you remember the garden?" asked the cat. "Yes," said Brandon, stopping suddenly. "Sometimes I dream about it." "Would you like to go to the garden again?" "Then you would not have to dream," asked the rusty cat. "Yes," said Brandon, "but I have to see Chloe first. She's going to Europe, and if I don't ask her this evening..." But the cat had already turned around and disappeared into the night. Suriak found work doing filing and other little jobs around an office. She made enough to live on, and she spent her breaks sketching in her books. Sometimes her co-workers would ask her to have lunch, but they soon gave up after always hearing the same reply. "No, thank you. I have an important drawing to work on." The last time anyone asked her out, she stayed by her desk to finish a picture of a toad she painted later that night. Brandon was so engrossed in his work, he didn't hear the toad hopping into his cubicle. "Do you remember the garden?" asked the toad. "I can take you there." Brandon looked up from his notes. "Of course I want to," he said, rubbing his temples. "I have to defend my thesis in 10 minutes. Please, just wait here, or come back tomorrow. Please, I've been working years for this, and Chloe is expecting, so I can't risk this fellowship." But the toad had already sprung away. It went on like that. Suriak would wake from dreamless sleep, drawing and painting pictures, and strange animals would seek out Brandon and beckon him back to the garden. Over the years, Brandon became an old, tired man, gradually more bitter with the world. He vowed he would take the next invitation to the garden. He waited, but no animals came for him. One day he took himself to the store and returned with a box of oil paints, brushes, and a medium-sized canvas. Taking the brush in his hand, he outlined the flowers, plants, and the giant banyan tree all surrounded by the sunlight. He peered behind the canvas. "Nothing," he said, a little disappointed. He looked at the picture again and cracked a smile. It wasn't exactly how he remembered it, but he wasn't disappointed with his first effort at painting. He went to place his initials in the corner and wound up making a splotch of paint. Brandon sighed. Then he grinned, biting his tongue as he worked the brush and turned the botched signature into a tiny mouse. "There you go," he said. "Lovely garden for you." Suriak was alone. She looked at the walls of the apartment with drawings and paintings that had accumulated with the years. She looked at the empty canvas in front of her, and as she went to pick up her brush, she saw the tiny brown mouse staring at her with beady black eyes. "Do you remember the garden?"
"Yes."
Suriak paused.
"I do."
"I can take you there if you'd care to join me. Then you wouldn't have to remember."
"Why, yes,"
she said as the brush slipped from her hand. "That sounds wonderful."
My name is Jennifer Green, and I'll be reading A Visit from the Past by Michael James Loeffler. Mark suddenly realized that he was standing in someone else's house. He did not recognize the appearance of the place, and some of what he saw just looked odd. He also did not recognize the man standing a few feet in front of him. After a moment, Mark asked, "Where am I? How did I get here?" "It's okay. You're okay," replied the man. "Please, try to remain calm." "What happened?" Mark then started feeling the sides of his head, checking for an injury. "Have I been hurt?" Then, after a few moments, he asked, "Was I drugged?" "No, nothing like that. Really, you are fine." "Then what's going on?" "Okay, this will be a little difficult to comprehend, but I have pulled you forward in time." After a moment spent staring at the man, Mark sarcastically replied, "Yeah, right." But as he looked around the room again, he wasn't so sure. He saw a large framed area on the wall that contained a completely black image. He realized that it looked like it could be a television, but it was huge, and it had to have been mounted into the wall so that the bulk of the chassis was hidden. Looking around some more, he saw oddly shaped devices mounted on the walls and ceiling that were emitting various colors of light. He then noticed a small device lying on the table in front of the couch. It had a similar appearance to the large one that was against the wall. Then he slowly turned back toward the man and stared at him. After a moment, he pointed to the device on the table and asked, "What is that?" The man walked around the couch and picked up the device. He pressed a button on it and held the now lit up screen so that Mark could see it. "It is a phone. Well, actually, it is a mobile computer that can connect to other computers from pretty much anywhere, but a minor function of it is that it can make calls, so we still call it a phone." After a few moments spent in contemplation of what the man had told him, Mark replied, "Oh, you mean it's a computer as in an electronic game, and they built it into a wireless phone. That's strange, but I guess that a phone without a cord would be convenient to use around the house." "No, not just in the house. I can go anywhere in the world and use it. Well, most places. It won't work in some of the largest wilderness areas or on the ocean, unless the ship that you are on has its own cell towers and communicating via satellites." Mark was finding it difficult to believe what he had been told. He then pointed to the framed object on the wall and asked, "But that's a TV, right?" "Yes. That is an 80-inch flat-screen TV, but it also has a computer in it, so I can do other things with it as well as watch movies." "By flat-screen, you mean..." "It is only about an inch thick. It weighs maybe 30 pounds. It's a lot better than your old cathode ray tubes." "So am I really in the future?" "Yes, you came from 1988, but you are now in 2035. "What am I doing here? Will I be able to go back?" "Why don't you come around over here and have a seat? Then we'll talk about it." Mark shrugged and then walked around to the front of the couch and sat down. The other man walked over and sat at the far end of the couch at an angle so that he could face Mark and said, "I guess I should introduce myself at this point. I'm Barry. It's nice to meet you." After a brief nod from Mark, he went on to say, About 10 years back, it was revealed that a company doing research into time travel for the military had made a breakthrough. They created a system that allowed them to see into the past. This viewer could be used to look back in time at anywhere on Earth. Well, it can actually be used to look elsewhere and has been used to study some astronomical events, but the calculations are far more complicated as the viewpoint moves further away, since the device has to locate a place in time and space relative to where it is currently, so it is only used a limited amount for that type of viewing. The computations are complex because the Earth is constantly in motion. With looking into the past just a second at something on Earth, the system has to calculate where your target is located, taking into account the rotation of the Earth and the movement of the Earth through space, since it is orbiting the Sun. Looking at anything outside of the solar system would also have to take into account movement of the solar system itself in the galaxy, and further out, the movement of the galaxy. Usually, people will watch a scene from the past, not a static picture, so the system has to recalculate the location and viewing angle for each image displayed 60 times a second. Wow, that's incredible! It makes sense that it would be complicated keeping up with a moving target in four dimensions. It must have done wonders for learning about the truth in historic events. Yes, it did. In the beginning, there were many corrections made to our historical records. Researchers would post the coordinates needed to view major events so that other scholars could easily find them. But after a short time, people started posting the coordinates for viewing less prestigious finds. These included things like celebrities showering or having sex and politicians acting in their personal life contrary to their public persona. That was soon followed by postings of local coordinates of interest. All privacy was lost. Wow! That seems like it would cause a lot of fights and even riots. Yes, it did, for a while. But since the authorities could use the system to track down whoever performed an illegal act and show the judge exactly what happened from any angle needed, the legal system was able to speed up trials with no doubts in the facts. Juries were no longer needed to decide what was the accepted truth. Did that cause the prisons to become overflowing with the guilty? It caused problems for a while, but some changes were made quickly. Since there was no doubt about guilt, prisoners that were sentenced to death were executed right away. Everyone in prison was reevaluated because of the viewer's capability. Many innocent people were released. Some criminals that had been previously given a light sentence were changed to incur a harsher sentence once the violence of what happened could be seen and verified. And after a while, the criminally minded found that they could no longer get away with any crime without being caught. This caused many of them to find legitimate jobs. What about those that did not change? Like a thief that always robbed someone and spent the money right away on trips or something that could not be returned. I could see those people just going in and out of jail, having their fun, and then being taken care of by the system for a while. Once the crime rates dropped, people in general were less willing to put up with criminals at all. Repeat offenders were determined to be useless to society and will be given a death sentence. Wow! It sounds like everyone has lost a lot of their freedom. Only the freedom to do things that hurt others. They actually got rid of or changed a number of laws that some people used to say limited their freedom. One of the big changes had to do with drugs. If you take drugs and don't hurt anyone, then you have not done anything wrong. But if you do hurt someone, you will be treated more severely than if you had done the crime without being impaired. But people will still get hurt. What if someone gets high and fires a machine gun in a mall or something? I assume they can also take trips back in time, since you were able to bring me here. Do people go back to prevent those types of crimes? Isn't it dangerous to mess with time? After they had developed the viewer technology, they were able to create a device to travel into the past, but it was very limited in its usefulness. Instead of being able to have me, as I am now, travel to last week, when I went through the machine, I would be placed at my target destination as expected, but I would be changed so that I was exactly like I would have been at that time. I would have my memories up to a week ago, and I would look exactly as I did at that time. To me, it would be like I was teleported to a different location with no idea that I had gone back in time. So there would be two of you there? The one that was from that time and the one that went back in time? No, The me from that time would have disappeared or simply been transported to the new location. We don't know which. So you can't prevent crimes? Actually, we can, within limits. There is a department in the government that prevents tragedies that are beyond a certain limit of effect. You mean if they hurt enough people or hurt important people? Yes. How does that work? The deputies are basically ready to act at all times when they are on duty. Because they cannot be told what they need to do when they are teleported back, they have one order that they have to be prepared to do. During their shift at work, they are always completely prepared. They have their body armor on and their weapons are ready. There have to be deputies ready around the clock because they have to be in that state at the time that they are being sent to. So what orders are they given? To kill the next person that appears in front of them once they appear somewhere. They will be placed so that the person about to commit the incident will be coming toward them. If the crime happens in a place where the perpetrator is not easily accessible alone, say he is in a car or walking in a group, the deputy will be sent back further in time to meet up with him when he is alone. So they kill the person before they commit the crime? Can't they just subdue them and use the explanation of what they are going to do to have them put in jail? That would not work, since no specifics can be sent to the deputies traveling back in time to pass on about the crime. They are given the one directive. So, if they prevent the event from happening, then no one will have any idea why the deputy killed the person? No, not usually. Although there have been some instances where letters or other documents have been found from the person that describes what was planned. So, whoever is in charge of sending the deputies back could send back a deputy to kill someone that he was mad at, and no one would ever know. Probably not even the person that sent the deputy back. Yes, that is possible, but the controllers work in groups, and they are given orders by a commission, so it would be difficult for a person to do something like that. Unless they were powerful and controlled the commission. Anything's possible, but that's highly unlikely. If you say so. Then, after a moment of contemplation, Mark asked, "Does it work differently when you pull people out of the past? It seems like it would work the same way in reverse, that I would actually replace the me in this time." "Well, actually, you aren't here. In addition to being able to show what happens in the past, the viewers can also analyze people. It was able to analyze your brain and create a simulation." "So, I'm just a computer program?" asked Mark, as he looked at his hands while he turned them over. "Yes, along with a projection of your body." Barry then pointed to the illuminated objects mounted on the ceiling and the walls. "So, I am a hologram? But I can feel a couch." "It's something like a hologram, but much more involved. The environment of the room is added into your simulation for you. Try to pick up the phone on the table." Mark tried to grab the phone, but he could not do it. His finger stopped against the surface of the device, but he could not get his fingers underneath it to lift it. It felt to him like the phone was part of the table, and as if the table was bolted to the floor. He could not make either move. "Wow, that's a lot to take in. But I remember exactly what I was doing before I got here. If this simulation just thinks like me, the memories wouldn't be so complete." "It doesn't just think like you do. It's a duplicate of exactly how your brain was functioning and what was stored in it when the duplicate was made." "So you can choose exactly when to create the copy?" "Yes. A lot of people have these systems and spend time with people from the past. I've had Stan Lee, that I've taken at different ages, watch various Marvel movies from the last decade with me. It's interesting to see the differences in his opinions at different points in his career." "Who is Stan Lee?" "Not Stan Lee, Stan Lee. Although his birth name actually was Stanley, he was a very famous comic book writer. He changed his name so that his family wouldn't be embarrassed with his work in that medium when he was starting out." "Oh, I don't really read comic books." "He worked on Spider-Man, the X-Men, the Avengers, and many others." "Ah, yeah, I've seen some of those comics, but I never noticed who wrote them." "Well, I've also had some conversations with Einstein, Edison, and a bunch of other famous people as well." "Cool." I must say, you are taking this better than anyone else I've had visit. Usually, there is a lot of disbelief and worrying and arguing, at least for a while. Pre-electronics people are the worst. They often start yelling about demons and such. Yeah, I'm pretty adaptable. I'm also a computer science major, so I can see how things could lead here, partially at least. But I guess you knew that. So I become famous for something, right? That's why I'm here? So that you can see how I am before I do whatever it is that I'm going to do, right? Well, not exactly. What do you mean? Why did you bring me here, then? I'll tell you in a few minutes. But first, will you answer a few questions for me? All right, I'll pay my dues. Shoot, I'll tell you the truth to any question. I've got nothing to hide. Okay, thanks. To start with, do you believe in love? Mark looked at him askew for a moment, and then decided that it didn't matter why he was asking that kind of question. After all, this was just a simulation. I don't believe in it. I know that it exists. I've been in love a couple of times. Okay, good. Those must have given you a lot of fond memories. No, they didn't love me back. So you haven't been in a relationship? I've dated some. I dated one girl in high school for a while that I think loved me, but I just didn't feel it. But you dated her anyway? Hey, I wasn't taking advantage of the situation or anything. I went out with her for a while to see if my feelings would grow, but it became clear that she saw more in the relationship than I did, so I broke up with her. I didn't want to string her along if there was no future in it. I wanted her to have every chance possible to find someone that would return her love. I know what it's like to have unrequited love, and I don't want to perpetuate that. So you've met various women over time that you might be interested in and gone out with them for a while to see if it would work out? Not exactly. I am not good at picking up women. Any time that I was interested in someone, I was either too shy or just too incompetent to get her to go out with me. All of the girls and women that I have dated hit on me. So you did better with those women. Any idea why? Well, it takes the pressure off when I know that they are already interested, of course. And since they were interested, they were more forgiving of my awkwardness, I guess. Okay, so are you dating anyone now? No, it's been over a year since I went out with anyone. Then after a few moments, Mark started to say, I've actually been kind of... Never mind. No, please go ahead and say what you were going to say. Fine. I've kind of gotten to the point where I would consider trying extra hard with someone that liked me, even if I didn't feel a connection. I mean, I've been out of college for a while now, and I just don't have as many chances to meet people as I used to. I guess you could say that I am getting desperate. So you may be to the point that you would consider having a long-term relationship, maybe even marriage with someone that you don't love? I don't know about marriage. Maybe. I'm lonely. I've been lonely for a long time. I've ended every possible relationship that I have had fairly quickly. Maybe love would grow given more time. What about kids? Whoa! Are you trying to set me up with someone? Marriage and kids? Will you answer my question? Fine. I don't want kids. I don't get along with them. Even when I was growing up, I got along better with grown-ups than most kids my age. So, if you did get married, you wouldn't have kids? No, definitely not. I hate kids. So, does that mean that you don't have someone for me to meet? You did meet her. Or, you will meet her tomorrow. Oh, cool. So, do we discover something together? What? That thing that makes me famous. You are not famous. Oh, so why did you bring me here? The woman that you meet tomorrow is my mother. Oh, then yes, you are my father. Crap. Well, I guess I must have changed my mind about kids then. I don't think so. Ah, so we don't get along. This is the only form that I've known you in, as a simulation. So I'm dead. You killed yourself. Why? I didn't know until now. This is the youngest you that I have talked to. I've been pulling you here from further and further back over the last 3 years of your life. Wait, you don't think that I killed myself because of you, do you? Yes, partially at least. I didn't have the whole picture before, just bits and pieces from your other visits. I think that you killed yourself because I was born, and in addition to hating kids, you felt that my birth trapped you into staying with my mother. I'm sorry, but you have to realize that it wasn't really you. You were not to blame. It had to have been me. I apparently gave up and settled for something less than what I wanted. Then I couldn't live with my decision. After contemplating for a moment, Barry responded, "Yes, I understand that now. I doubt that this helps, but I like you. You seem like a fine person." "Thanks. You seem nice, too, but broken." "I am broken. Unrequited love can break anyone." "I'm sorry." "Me too."
This is Collecting Ghosts by Rachel K. Jones and Lawrence Raphael Brothers. Evan's hobby was collecting ghosts. He had puppy ghosts, lizard ghosts, playful wispy kitten ghosts, even an ethereal shy fox ghost he'd found whimpering outside. Ghost making was easy. You buried their bodies in your backyard, and they'd be yours for life. Simple. Easy enough for roadkill, but Evan had ambitions. Rare ambitions. Museum-sized ambitions. It was easy. A rented van and an air of authority. The curator smiled and nodded. Then the backhoe, and then the solemn reburial. The spectral tyrannosaur screamed in rage and gestured skyward with its tiny arms. Evan looked up, uncomprehending. He didn't see the asteroid on its collision course. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrood, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.